Margaret Bootland and it's Reel 3. So now you will continue with the story of your evacuation, I think, won't you? You were saying how you had to go round and make lists of pregnant women.
Yes.
Were there many?
No, not many. A few surprises. The bandmaster's wife was pregnant and I didn't know. And she was my next door neighbour and used to come in for coffee and things. But she said it was too early to announce it to everyone. And but they were given priority for going out by air. But eventually, my husband I got a telegram to say that he was on the hospital train. And I was sure he was wounded. And when he eventually, it was an overnight journey from where they'd been fighting down in the south. He looked shocking. He'd had malaria again, and he looked awful. But as he had a quarter and a bed, he was not taken into the hospital because they needed every bed they could get. They were even wounded in the corridors. This hospital train used to come up every evening with the wounded on board. And apparently he'd had this relapse, and he was the orderly officer, got his commission then. He was the orderly officer and should have reported to the colonel at 10 o'clock. And of course the thing was, where's Bootland? Where is he? Should have reported. So someone ran over to Curly Goldthorpe. He was a lieutenant then. And they said, do you know where he is? He says, well, I should try his tent. Because he said, I saw him at lunchtime and he said he felt lousy. He had a terrible headache. He says, and I could see he was flushed. He says, I'm going to lie down. Perhaps I can sleep it off. And the thing was, he was on his bed, rumbling, talking to the top of the tent when they found him. So he was immediately put into the, on the hospital train. And then he was evacuated that night.
What were your feelings at this moment, Margaret? Did you know anything about the Japanese?
Not really, no. I didn't.
Did you realise the seriousness of the situation, do you think?
Well, I had faith in the army. I knew that they'd look after us. And things. But it was a blessing that Alan was up when he was ill. I'm sure it was God's hand. Because things got... Every day he had to go up to the hospital for his medication and injections and whatever he had to have. And every day he got stronger and we fed him with his favourite dishes, Lottie and I. And the two boys, they were over the moon because Daddy had come back. And Ian's father. But we decided things, Lot and I decided things were bad and we should be moving off soon. So we went over to the Dursey, the tailor, and we ordered two suits, khaki drill, and like a soldier's uniform, trousers and a bush jacket. We thought that would be more comfortable to travel in than dresses or anything. Well, the tailor, he measured me, and then he was just measuring Lottie when in the doorway, Alan was there. And he said, what are you doing here? I said, we're just ordering a suit each of khaki drill. We know we'll be travelling soon, so we thought it'd be much more useful. Uncomfortable. He says, well, I'm sorry, love. You have 2 hours to get out. So he went and spoke to the head tailor, K, cancelled the order, and we came back to pack. So, and poor Sammy, the cook, he was in tears because his job was going. And so Alan said, well, he said, I'll be damned if I'll leave this for the Japanese, because in my cupboard, the sideboard, I had a lovely dinner service thing, but he says, they're not having this. And he picked out an unopened bottle of brandy. And he shouted, Sammy, for the bearer, and Sammy came running in. Yes, Sal. He said, we've got some small Dettol bottles in the go-down, haven't we? Yes, Sal. He says, well, will you get three? Rinse them out well with cold water and bring them into the kitchen to me, please. Yes, sir. He went and rinsed them well. And then Alan sniffed at them, put them in a large depchi, which was a pan with a tight-fitting lid. I think he put a handful of salt, covered them well over with water, put it on the gas, and boiled them for ages, till there was no smell at all. Then Sammy was helping him, and then they let it cool off a bit. Then the bottles were taken out and rinsed very well with cold water, no smell. So then they were shaken and then put on a low wall in the garden, and the sun soon baked them dry. Then he took them indoors, and the bottle, it was good brandy, just filled them free. Because I remember saying, shabash, I couldn't have done it better. And when he'd tightened the corks up, he gave one to Lottie, one to me, and he said, I'm having this one. And he put it in his hip pocket, which was to prove a godsend later. But he said, I've got some band boys coming with hand carts, and anything that be of use to the hospital. He said, anything, I want you to go through the house, and anything of use to the hospital, I want you to put them in the hall. And there was crockery, two radios, lots of books, pillows, sheets, towels, anything that we thought would be of use, even mattresses, to put in the corridors. And then, there were several hand carts full of stuff, and it all went up to the hospital. And then he said, now then, and we had a bedroll each, and one for him, and we started packing. We had to take no more than 60 pounds. We had to have blankets, pillow, mosquito net, food for 14 days, and so when I got a clean pillow slip and put it on the pillow, no, he said, you don't do that. I said, I must have a pillow. He said, look, take the pillow out. Get me two clean pillowcases, will you, Bess, please? And two for Lot. And we did. Put one pillowcase inside the other. Now then, and he went to the wardrobe, and he got my dresses out and rolled them up, put them on the bed. He says, now pack that pillowcase with your clothes. And these, most of them were soft stuff. And we filled the pillowcase up, and she and I, we then stitched them up, one and then the other. And I had a pillowcase. It wasn't quite as soft as it might have been with feathers, but at least we got our wardrobe through, which the others never thought of. And but the thing was, when I got to India and unpacked, I found out I'd left every belt inside the wardrobe door. I'd had a wire inside the door with all my belts on, and none of us had thought to do that. But that that's beside the point.
You were saying food for 14 days.
Yes.
So what sort of food would you have taken, Margaret?
Well, concentrate as much as we could. But Mrs. Mansfield, she went on better. I'll tell you in the story when I can find it. We put some tinned stuff in too, but we kept the weight down. Tinned fruit, because we didn't know what was ahead. And you couldn't have butter or anything like that. But rusks and so on. But the bedrolls were tightened up, put in the hall, and then poor Sammy, he was in tears. But there was such a lot of stuff in the house, that hers and mine, that we told him to take it, and if he could sell it, it was our property, if he could sell it to do so. And then he had a thought, he says, Saab, I can be accused of looting. They will say I have looted this. Will you give me a chit to say that you've given it me freely? And I said, yes, I will, Sammy, I will. And he wrote a note, and Lottie and I signed it as well, to say it was our property and we'd given it to Sammy freely to do dispose of as he wanted. And when I was on the train all night, waiting at Mamie O, it suddenly struck me, under my staircase there was a big it was a lovely panelled hall, but there was a cupboard under the stairs, and one young officer had come and asked me if I could could I look after his sports kit until he got back. And then another turned up, and it was packed full of all sports gear, tennis rackets, hockey sticks, squash rackets, you name it, it was there. And that was it, that was left behind. So whether Sammy found it, I don't know. But when at 10 o'clock, it was dark, and the Garris came for us, we went to the station, and Alan was with us. He should have gone back, but the colonel asked him to stay on another day and see the families as far as Mandalay. And then he says, you can go on and rejoin the battalion, which was way down country. And I had to say goodbye to him in the train at Mandalay. We sat all night in the train at Mamie O, because people were coming from up country, around about, brigade families and things like that. And it wasn't till 6 o'clock next morning that the train pulled out for Mandalay. When we got down to Mandalay at 9 o'clock, there was a crowd on the platform, lots of people waiting to board the train, and I saw Alan go outside and speak to a police commissioner, Englishman, and then I saw him shake hands with two very handsome Indian policemen. There were Sikhs, turbans, but they were very nice, tall. They proved to be really good. Alan shook hands with these boys, and then he came back in the train and said goodbye to Ian and I and Lottie and Keith. I remember Keith. Goodbye, Uncle Alan. And, it's terrible. I didn't break down until he moved off. And then I had a weep. But it's so hard to weep in front of them. So that was it. But people got on the train, and we went, and I heard a woman say that had got on the train, I wish this train would get a move on. She says, she looked to watch round about this for the last two mornings. The Japs have been over in Bomber Station. So she says, I wish they'd get a move on. Eventually, we did, and we went over the Arva Bridge. Huge thing, right over the Irrawaddy. And then we went on to Monywa, where there was a steamer waiting for us. And we all trooped on the steamer. And we went up the Chindrin River.